Spotlighting Maine's business advisors who build their practice through collaboration. This is AceCast. Now, here are your hosts, team experience designer Kim Dakin-Neal and business efficiency strategist Priscilla Hansen-Mahoney.
I have the pleasure of interviewing today Bill Stone of Promising Futures. Bill is not only a member of ACE, but he's also our president. And I really am so excited to have you here today, Bill.
Thank you very much. The excitement is mine as well.
I wanted to take a moment to get to understand what you do in your consulting practice and what makes it unique.
I think the primary piece that makes my practice unique is the fact that it's based on a philosophy from physics, and that I help people make career decisions or help people find the best fit job-wise based on the principle of self-organization. Simplistically, I help people with scanner tuning.
That's a great metaphor, scanner tuning. So you're really helping them tune into what their strengths are and where they can best be served.
Well said. It's a little more comprehensive than that, in that people want to feel important. They want to know that they make a difference. They want to have that difference recognized, be appreciated.
Sure.
And of course, we want to be loved. Early in our lives, those situations that allow us to achieve that recognition, that self-esteem, if you will, are already established. That we tend to gravitate towards those situations that are going to be most productive for us. And what I help people do is develop a vocabulary to describe what they're looking for and who they are as people, which, as I call it, scanner tuning, helps them recognize opportunities. It helps learn intuition, if you will. The more analysis they can do, then the more that intuitive process will work toward helping them recognize opportunities. Sometimes that means looking at old things with new eyes.
Sure.
So by tuning our scanners, we can see things all around us that could create opportunities that otherwise we would have missed without that tuning process.
With your consulting practice, Promising Futures, give us a little bit of background on what you do and specifically what problems that you're solving for your clientele.
Initially, it comes down to building a vocabulary to help individuals describe themselves, and then building a vocabulary to describe what they're looking for. And the more this vocabulary becomes enriched, the more precise their scanner will be, and the more likely they are to find opportunities. The vocabulary about self, of course, as you just indicated, focuses on strengths. What are the things that make them happy? What kinds of problems do they like to solve? But it also focuses on temperament, because at the core of the self-organizing process, temperament carries the weight or value sometimes that organizes who we are as people. And if you understand at least a sense of how you tend to behave, what you tend to value, then you can go forward with decision-making with a lot more confidence. A process that I call a four-step process. That as they build a vocabulary, they first of all answer the question, what am I willing to do? It's not a challenge to say, well, are you willing to help yourself? It's really, what are you willing to do? And what do you have the strength to do? And where is your level of confidence? And what are you willing to take on? And if that represents a barrier, then maybe there are some things to work on, but it's all about being realistic. The second part is looking at, as I said, temperaments and values, what really matters to you in the work that you do. I want to emphasize that all work has worth. Sometimes I will work, I think in one particular, a woman that I worked with, and she went on listing all, I want to do this and I want to do that, and there was no pattern or sense to it.
Huh.
So I finally asked her, I said, I'm not convinced these are really the things you want. She says, no, if I told you what I really want, you'd be angry with me.
Interesting.
And so I, of course, had to ask her, well, what did you think this was? She said, I really want to be a mother. That's the most important thing to me. And I just had to emphasize that certainly has as much worth as butcher, baker, candlestick maker, or anything else. That's what mattered to her in the work that she did.
So here you are speaking with her in the context of what she should be doing with a career and kind of letting you know what you wanted to hear.
Exactly.
And what her true passion was something even more meaningful to her than that.
And career is a lot more than our paid employment.
Correct.
It's also those ways that we make a difference. And that is how she wanted to make a difference, and she needed to celebrate that. She needed to have recognized that regardless of what other pressures she might have, what she wanted to do had as much worth as what anybody else might want to do.
How enlightening for her as well. I mean, what a helpful conversation that must have been for her to be able to say that out loud. That's not always something that women dare to say.
Well, I hope it was. And certainly that's not gender specific. But, motherhood, I guess, is pretty gender specific. But the fact that there's some either avocational interest or geographic interest or family interest, whatever it is, this whole idea of scanner tuning has to include other things besides simply where a paycheck might come from.
So you're really helping her dial in her life and her purpose.
Exactly. Yeah. Just exactly. Purpose is what drives us. The second two pieces to that process is knowing how we're going to gather information. How do we like to learn? Where are we going to learn to synthesize the information out there into effective knowledge for ourselves?
Yeah.
And synthesis is the key term. We're inventing new knowledge to describe ourselves and to describe our interests and goals. And the final step is building synergy, and that around the fact that we are fundamentally tribal creatures.
Yes.
Our ancestors, whether we were running around on the steppes of Russia or the Serengeti or wherever, we were tribal creatures. That's how we survived. And if we weren't a good member of the tribe and included in the tribe, we died. It was simple as that.
Sure.
And so that fundamental drive has never gone away. Now, you can call it networking.
Mm-hmm.
But as our economy has become more complex, we're no longer hunter-gatherers, that capacity to join a tribe becomes more complex and more difficult. Now we have several tribes. ACE, for example, is one of our tribes. We get in there to network. We get in there to gain knowledge. We get in there to gain camaraderie. We get in there to build our business.
Right.
And so that fourth task, building those synergistic relationships, is critical. And I avoid the term networking a little bit because that sounds a little more exploitive. You know, Priscilla, what can you do for me?
Right.
What it's really about is, Priscilla, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
In sales, there's a term called the 70-30 rule, which is if you're trying to sell somebody something, you want them to do 70% of the talking.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit more like what it's about. It's about finding out what other people need and how can I help them. So networking is around building those synergistic relationships as opposed to exploiting.
And you really get out what you put in. And I think that's really the sum up of ACE, is the collaboration that we experience is really all about how much you're willing to put forth as a member as well.
Absolutely. And I know in my own experience, as you said, I'm president, I wanted to know what was going on. I wanted to know what other people had to offer. And really, president has afforded me the best seat in the house because I get to see all the interesting projects that our members are doing, the kinds of exciting things they're doing, the things that bring them pleasure as they tune their scanners and I tune my scanners to new opportunities, find out about things like, let me think, podcasts.
Yeah.
And things that I might not otherwise have
been aware of. Well, it's one of the pleasures that Kim and I have experienced in doing these interviews is that we've gotten to know our members on a completely different level. I think that's most valuable.
Well, if you're going to collaborate, you need to know what's on the shelf that you can pull down and work with. One of the ideas I hope to put in members' minds is the idea that they are not all by themselves. Actually, they could be CEOs of a very large company because as they take on more complex projects, they have all of these people they can collaborate with and build their practice
that way. Exactly. Now, you described an aha moment for a woman who was telling you about an ideal career, but when she really discussed what she wanted, it became something else. Can you describe an aha moment that you've had for yourself in your business that really changed your mindset?
Absolutely. The pivotal moment in my career came when I just finished my dissertation. I'd earned my doctoral degree. And I earned my doctorate by proving that everything I believed about career development was wrong. And that was a bit devastating because now what? I had come to believe that career development was an orderly, predicted process. Mm-hmm. It occurred in natural stages, usually age-related. Mm-hmm. And if you knew how old somebody was, you could pretty much know the kinds of issues that they were wrestling with. Well, that's not true.
Right.
And I happened to be watching, rather serendipitously, a Nova special on chaos theory.
Huh.
And they were talking about self-organizing systems. And the basic premise behind chaos theory is there isn't any chaos. That basically any elements, whether it's your career self-concept, a weather system in the Caribbean, is a self-organizing system. And it follows pretty commonly shared tendencies to organize. So if you think of your career as a self-organizing system, then you begin to try to understand, as I mentioned, vocabulary building, what are the key components that make up you as a person, your temperament, your values, and what are the things that tend to bring you pleasure. And while you're never able to predict exactly what something's going to do, like where a hurricane is going to go, you can predict the tendencies. You knew how they tend to act.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of a career, if you know where the people who may have common interests tend to hang out, if you know what kinds of work climates tend to make you happy, if you tend to know the kind of people you like to work with, then you can be more intentional and sculpt your future. Keeping in mind, it's never going to turn out the way you think it will
or
that you exactly want to, but the chances of you finding satisfaction increase as you have that scanner tuned on what matters to you.
In your experience, in all the experience of years that you've been working with people, you must have built up quite a database on what people tend to do. And so you're able to make those predictions a lot easier as someone who has all that information.
And more importantly, help them to make the predictions that they need to make. I fundamentally hold up the mirror so that they can see themselves and see what matters to them. One of the groups of people that I've worked a lot with are folks who have just lost their job. Either they were fired, company closed, they were laid off because of business conditions, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm often working with people that are pretty agitated. That might mean they're just so excited, free at last, free
right,
at last.
Right.
Or they're absolutely despondent. Or they flip back and forth between all of those stages. And when those people are able to step back and look at the patterns in their lives and see the things that have tended to work for them, it is very gratifying, as you can almost see them sit up straighter, they stand a little taller, and they begin to realize they do have a way to make a difference, and there will be opportunities for them.
What a gift to give someone who has served you, especially if you are a company that has to make that really hard decision of letting people go. Like I said, when I was a hiring manager, if I ever got used to firing people, I needed a different career. But what a gift you're giving to people who are letting people go, to give them something more than just a severance check, something more than just a pink slip, but hope about their future.
Well, I think I'm the one who receives the gifts because I get to hear their stories. I get to hear the things they're excited about, and I get to watch them feel better about the situation they're in. And I've had a range. I've had people who I thought were dangerous. I've had people who just sat there with great racking sobs. I've had people who were in such shock as like they were wandering around the parking lot and I had to go find them. And then I've had people who just came charging in and said, finally, I want to start this business. I'm going to do this new thing. And now this is the incentive I need.
Yeah,
I got a little bit of money.
I got kicked out of the nest.
That's right. And I'm spreading my wings.
And
just watching that is very exciting. Very tense at times, of course, when you're dealing with someone you think might explode and come over the table at you. But that's unusual. yeah. that extreme, but it can.
But it can. It can. I've definitely been in that situation myself and letting someone go, and they don't take it so well.
But as soon as they begin to develop that vocabulary, describe what matters, describe the situation there, and certainly there has to be some catharsis there to get things on the... Because if someone is just so anxious that they, you know, the whole flight or fight thing, they just can't think. You can't work with them when they're in that state.
Right,
you have to
right.
help them. And some, it just means sitting with them. It may mean a conversation. It may mean some physical activity, like going for a walk.
Yeah.
But once they begin to talk about what matters to them, start to build the strength to face what's coming, begin to gather the information they need, and begin to build those synergistic relationships, life gets back on sometimes a better keel. Just parenthetically, there's a particular group that's especially interesting to me, especially my experience in the manufacturing sector. Quite often, you have people who have worked in a manufacturing facility of some kind, who went in there because my cousin got me the job, or my uncle got me the job. It isn't really anything I was interested in, but I had good benefits. So they go there day after day doing something that's counter to their personality, do a good job, but it's not them.
Right.
And suddenly they're released. Their affect, their sense of self is actually flat. They have no idea because their self-concept has been basically taken from them.
Your identity is gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
And watching those people begin to describe what really makes a difference to them is very exciting. But it takes a while.
That does take a while. That's a process of getting to know your own self again. That's very powerful. If you could describe a mistake that you made early on in your practice, what mistake did you make and what lesson did it teach you?
I think the primary lesson came when I learned not to assume what people needed and what would be the ideal job for them. One of the things that we use as career counselors and consultants are assessments which point to particular careers. You sit down, you answer 100 questions, get a printout, and there's your life all planned out for you. And to assume that those are precise, accurate, or even all that helpful in terms of the result is wrong. Rather, those assessments become another way to help build the vocabulary.
It's another tool, sure.
Sure. Quite often, if people don't know what matters to them in the work that they do, how are they going to answer the questions with any authority?
Right.
And so you get junk in, junk out. So it becomes important to understand that people come in and ask you something, but they're asking something as a way to start a conversation, not because they actually want to know the answer, or they even know what to ask.
So you're looking for the question beyond the question.
Well said.
Yeah.
You got to peel back those layers and get at the core. Like the woman who wanted to win
the motherhood. If you had just let her answer that question with her first answer, she would have been off target.
And nothing would have ever come of the conversation.
Yeah.
She'd have gone the direction she wanted to go. And with a lesser confidence that it was okay to want to be a mother.
Yeah, yeah. What a great help it is for you to be able to step in and help direct people to their next career moves, help them transition out of one area to another. You're really helping them step into the place where they belong.
I think that's absolutely right. And the place that they belong may not necessarily be just a job title. They may do something for a job that is not as consistent with their personalities it might be, in order to deal with other things that are more important to them. So it's a holistic analysis.
That's fantastic. Well, we are running out of time. Bill, I love talking to you. You have great stories, and you have such amazing insight on how people perceive things and how you can serve them and how you can help. And it's always helped me as a consultant hearing your stories. And I just want to give you an opportunity, Mr. President of the Association of Consulting Expertise, to speak about ACE and how the ACE membership has helped you personally in your business.
Three major ways. One, as a sole practitioner, it helped me because there's some camaraderie associated with it. You just get to meet with people, and who are also sole practitioners or work in small businesses, but have such a wide variety of backgrounds, and you have conversations with people that you might not otherwise interact with, engineers and accountants, and health professions, and just on and on. That's one major piece. Secondly is the educational part. I have yet to go to a meeting that we had a speaker that I didn't draw from.
Yes.
The speakers are excellent, and there's always some little tidbit I can take back to my practice. And also, in conjunction with that, are sessions that are offered by our members. And I am always impressed with our roundtable sessions that usually follow the speakers. Just the depth and quality of people who are members of
those. I get so much from those. Absolutely.
And finally, it's a good way to make connections and make money.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be crass here.
Yeah. Well, we're all in business. Working with each other, the tide rises all ships.
That whole collaboration. I mean, it's more than just a group hug.
Yeah.
We
really do work together. Bill, I am so pleased to have been able to be the one to interview you today. I had to arm wrestle Kim for it.
Well, I'm glad to hear you thought you won that contest and didn't come in second.
But I really appreciate having you here today. It's been a pleasure, and thank you.
Thank you.
For more information, as well as additional interviews, you can visit us at Association for Consulting Expertise at consultexpertise.com.